Welcome back to the Sea Mask Podcast, everybody. I'm here with Will and Mike and our new friend, Jacob. Jacob is our second marriage out of the US matchmaking program that we talk about on here often. You got married November 10th or 16th, right?
Yeah, 16.
November 16th. And I wanted to bring Jacob on because I thought that it would be, first of all, therapeutic for me. This is a selfish request. Jacob has been thoughtful in his email replies to me and on the subject of becoming a husband at the age of 26. But also, I think it'd be really nice for all the young guys who watch CMAS to hear that this is possible. It's good. It doesn't have to be a protracted process to enter the vocation of marriage. So, really appreciate Jacob you waking up very early on the West Coast to join us.
Yeah, you'll see the sun come up kind of through the clouds. I live in Western Oregon, so it rains every day. But yeah, it's fine. It's all good. I'm up every morning, so
Yeah, well, let's start with that. Are you a farmer officially? What's the profession there?
dairy farmer. So we milk about 600 cows here. I live right across the street from the dairy. I'm not like a homesteader kind of dairy farmer. I'm like, that's like an actual business, and there's like 20 employees on the farm and stuff like that. So, that's what I do day in, day out. Treat cows, feed cows, help out with whatever needs done. So,
And was that, did you find that doing that work for as long as you've done it, did that make it difficult to get out? We talk, Mike, I know, especially you've talked a lot about like, well, just no guy can complain about not having a girlfriend or a wife unless he's just every day, he's just asking a girl out on a date, just building up that courage. Did you find it hard in your line of work, to do that when you're milking cows sun up to sundown?
yeah, you know what? It's been kind of a thing where I pushed myself into it, because I think when you're a single guy and you're living out in the country and stuff like that, you don't have like people around all the time. You're not going out to bars or whatever a lot of young people do and stuff like that. So, I mean, I did that in college and all that, and wanted to get away from that lifestyle. And then I kind of just dug into work. And so kind of did it to myself a little bit. There's always going to be more work when you're doing anything, but especially on the farm, there's always something else you can do, right? So kind of dug into that. And then I started coaching baseball and basketball at the high school. And I was filling all my time that I could with work. And I wasn't actually doing the things that I needed to do to get into a vocation.
But you knew you weren't going to be a priest.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. I have, you have like the one-off homily that you hear and you're like, oh, maybe you're not gonna, but it's, yeah, no. I pretty much knew that I wanted to do this. Yeah.
Had a real airheaded moment early on dating my now wife where we were just sitting on the couch and I just thought before I spoke, I was like, what if I became a priest? And she just started crying. She's like, what am I doing here then? Like, why are we dating? I was like, no, you don't understand. Like, I was just thinking because it would, like, I thought of it like, what if I became a firefighter? I just said it. How many years were you kind of down the line of digging in into work before you thought, I should probably get a move on with the whole marriage thing if I don't want to hit 30 and be still single?
Yeah, so I graduated college and then I worked in Wisconsin for about 6 months doing IT, software engineering kind of stuff, because that was what I learned in college, was computer science and math. But then kind of when COVID hit and all the shutdowns happened and stuff like that, I just wanted to get out of the city and wanted to get out of the space. Plus I was doing all this tech stuff, and so we were. But anyways, I was wanted to get back home and start working on the farm again. And so that was about 4 years that I've been living here without being married. So yeah, 4 years of kind of working and helping out the high school and, spending time with family, but not really getting into the marriage.
Did you have a strategy? Did you have like a wake up call moment or something, or did it just naturally come down the line?
I mean, really, I was listening to, I can't remember when you announced it, the Us by Return, but I was listening to a podcast from you guys or Tim or something like that. And I, yeah, it was kind of funny because I had had the idea before, I mean, it's not like obviously you went out and did it and you perfected it and all that. But you just have like this one-off idea where it's like, oh man, I wish like good Catholic guys would set you up with, because that's, I mean, any good relationship that I've had in the past, it was always my friends setting me up with their girls' friends and stuff like that, So it was just kind of a realization like, oh, this is a good chance here to jump in and see what can happen.
Right. So then was when did you and Aaron start dating?
It was right at the beginning of August 2023 or 2024, excuse me.
So yeah, so it hasn't been
2023. New Year's
20,
messing me
20,
up.
okay, 2023. So from date to engagement, how long was it?
It's about 9 months. We got engaged in May.
Nice. And then how long was the engagement?
6 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. The first question that I had written down to ask you was, and Mike, Will, anything you guys want to jump in, just cut me off. There's definitely a cultural expectation for dating to be roughly a year to 2 years. Engagement to be 6 months to a year, sometimes 2 years, people are engaged. I was just talking to a friend of mine. He's early 20s, like 21. He doesn't want to get married to his now girlfriend until he's 25, 26. So the girl he's dating right now, he's thinking 4 years from now, we'll get married. You obviously didn't have that perspective. And did you get any pushback from your approach to this?
I would say that I got some little conversations and stuff, but no big pushback. My parents were both, I think, understanding that I was ready for marriage, and I think they both love my wife a lot. And so I didn't hear a lot of that. I guess I'm a pretty serious guy, so they kind of knew that I was ready, and when they met her, they knew that she was ready. So I didn't get a lot of pushback from that. I would say more so the cultural stuff is that I didn't want that short timeline as much as I should have. And so I was kind of protracting things out and trying to make excuses for myself for not like getting things done. Like just I should have been more proactive with things. And I would say that would be the only thing was like, if I had any internal dialogue about that, like kind of just, I should have just been like more confident in this is the right way to go. This is how you should do things. But I think the
That's
culture kind of creeps in on us.
a really good insight into yourself. And a lot of guys have that problem even after they get married. And it stays with them because the wife remembers that he put her through far longer of waiting than he needed to. The average is something like 2.5 years, right? That people wait nowadays before getting married. And that can make a woman kind of bitter because she thinks, well, didn't he know? And if he knew, didn't he just take action? Wasn't he confident enough to say, let's do this? Because I work with a lot of married guys, and that sense that they don't really know the direction that they're taking things in, that can persist with them even after she says yes and even after they're married. What was the thing you were afraid of, Jacob?
Yeah, I think I was afraid of people pushing back and people saying that I was going too fast and that kind of thing. And then I think I was just afraid of, I mean, you live 26 years by yourself and that kind of thing, you know? And so it's a big life change and that sort of thing.
Now
So
there's this person in your bed. Like,
yeah.
what's happening?
Yeah. That's
It's
crazy. Yeah.
still weird, like climbing into bed. I'm like, gotta
Yeah.
scoot over to the
You don't know. Yeah, you're like, do I cuddle or what?
side. Do I just go to sleep? What's the protocol here?
Sure. So it's a big change for sure.
Yeah, did you
I
feel
think
any sort
I
of.
think a lot of guys fail to, sorry to cut you off, Nick.
No,
when
please.
it comes to the trepidation around getting married, let's say in under a year, my wife and I were married within like 8 or 9 months, of dating and whatnot. We just kind of jumped straight into it. But God always provides the loaf of bread, so to speak, when you take these big leaps into the, these roles of responsibility that we feel particularly called for. Right. So this like this trepidation of trying to get everything ready is sort of like a fundamental lack of faith in a sense as well, whether it be, jumping into the role of getting married, or, understanding that you want to be the sole income provider, but there's a lot of fear around that. And that's sort of that's the handicap. I mean, yours was different and obviously the sense that, you were afraid of pushback. But ultimately, as you know now, you're on marital island. So if you need to cut everybody off, then that's what you need to do, right? That was sort of the expectation for my wife and I, and I laid it out plainly. I said, if anybody interferes with you and I will cut them off like a cancer without thinking twice about it. Even if it's my own family, your own family, it doesn't matter who it is. I said, what matters is you and me. The family that we have is within this home, and that's it. End of story. Doesn't matter who. It doesn't matter who else is around us, whether we're blood or whether we're not. But my encouragement to anybody, men listening, there's, I work with so many of these guys that are either in the context of courtship and they're seeing a woman, or they feel that pull toward marriage. Is like that fear is the enemy, right? God, in every single aspect of my life, whether it's, marriage, becoming a father, all of these things, God always provided the loaf of bread, so to speak, at the perfect time. Not in the time that I necessarily, let's say, wanted it, but it was in his providential timing and absolute perfection and timing, always provided it. So lean not on your own understanding, which clearly you didn't, but some encouragement for the men that are listening.
Mike, that cut out anybody who gets in our way was very Mario Puzo of you. That was the most Godfather thing you've ever said.
Is it the
Listen
gold
here,
chain,
honey.
bro? Is it the gold
No,
chain that it is?
it was describing anybody who got in your way as a cancer to be cut out.
Hey,
It's
language
great.
matters.
No, it's real. Yeah, that's real. I had a similar like autoimmune reaction as things were progressing. Was like, there's nothing that's going to stand in our way. Friends need to be on our side. Family needs to be on our side. We need to hear words of encouragement. And anything that's not that, like, you're not really going to get the time of day from us. Like, this needs to be treated. What's crazy is, so Jacob, we shouldn't be married right now. We actually have another 3 weeks technically before our official wedding day. But my wife and I finished our marriage prep in 2 weeks and asked our priest, so like, is this, do we have to wait this 6 months? And he's like, no, that's like a suggestion. And I was like, so when can you get us married? And he's like, well, did you have a date in mind? And I said, when are you free?
So
So,
we did paste.
and that moved it up like 2.5 months. And now my wife is expecting. Like, we could have been 2.5 months of additional waiting here. So yeah, it's just but I'm very curious. What your experience was like, the sort of refrain that you hear, how did you know that she was the one? Like, did you conceive of it in that way, or was it sort of some other test that you put yourself through to make that decision?
Yeah, well, first of all, I wish we hadn't waited 6 months because, like, I was ready to be married before we even got engaged, right? And so, I mean, that 6 months from when we were engaged to when we were married was, I mean, in my opinion, it was kind of pointless. Like, it was a struggle. I mean, trying to stay chaste and trying to still make the travel back and forth and still trying to do this in between game was nonsense. I think you did the right thing moving things up. But then, as far as how did I know? I would say it was kind of similar to when, because I'm a revert, so I would say it's kind of similar to like coming back to the church, coming back to the faith. In that you don't like there are moments, right? There's these moments of you can feel it, like palpable grace, like when you come back to the sacraments and all that stuff, you have those moments. But they can't say there's one moment in particular where I feel that I knew, right? There's moments where I started to know more and more and more, and eventually it comes into this culmination of yeah, this is the woman I want to marry, right? So there's those moments that come together, and it makes you certain as time goes on.
Yeah, I think that's a very honest way to put it. Did you still, though, like leading up to the moment of engagement, even if you like have the data and you have the intrinsic motivation, like, yeah, this is, I feel good about this, I want to do this, it's still an act of courage, is it not?
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. For me, it was buying the ring. It was like, okay,
Okay.
now it's real. I'm on the path to doing it. And then yeah, as far as like getting down on the knee and stuff like that, I just kind of ad-libbed it. But yeah,
Well,
no.
you know what's so funny about that? About that specific act of getting on the knee. You know, you could be so good with words, and I'd like to say I'm, you know, decent at speaking. There's some level of, you know, charisma and emotional quotient. When I went on my knee and I was like, I know what I'm going to say, I flubbed like I was in the third grade. I don't know if it happened to you, but I was like, I recorded it. She didn't know I was recording it. It was in my gym at the time, and I get on one knee. And I'm like trying to explain something to her, and then I literally, like, you could hear it audibly, like, fuck, whatever. And I just get on my knee. I'm like, will you marry me? Because I could not find the words to say. I'm not sure if it was a similar experience for you, but dude, I totally flubbed it, man. It was endearing, but nevertheless.
Yeah, for sure. I think the ring was upside down when I opened the box. That was the thing that I noticed that I messed up on for sure.
Mine was flawless. I don't know what you guys
I'm
did. I'm sure it was. Wow. Yeah, so yeah, it's those moments where there's not many, I think, for I will figure out how to start this sentence. The rest of the thought is finishing baking. There's a difference between existing and living, and one requires an act of will, and the other just sort of happens because you just continue to move through life. And I think there are moments that men have to choose to participate in and direct in their life. And that feels weird because you really can go very, very far into life kind of by accident. You can get decades into a job. You can find yourself in different, you know, geographic locations, all sorts of situations. And the act of buying the ring and then getting down on one knee and then finally, you know, wedding day at the altar, those are all kind of those moments where you're it just feels weird, like in the limbs, you know, like feels weird in the chest. Like, okay, I'm doing this now. I'm deciding to like steer the boat of my life, and you don't have sufficient information to know if it's going to work out, but you just sort of have to act. Did you feel any of that, any of what I'm describing there?
It's the kind of thing where you can intellectualize as much as you want. You can know that it's right. You can, be all the way there, but there's always going to be that little bit left that you just have to leap into, right? So for sure. I mean, that's how you build on your virtues. You just have to jump into the faith.
Yeah, Will's tweet did a lot for me. He said something to the effect of you'll never be ready for marriage. And that was a conclusion that like I was reaching naturally, and then he tweeted that and I was like, okay, good. So there isn't a moment in this engagement or in this dating where I'm gonna feel like launch ready, and that's when I push the button. So just push the frickin' button. Just do it.
It's most definitely a process of becoming. It's not, you can't get ready. You just learn to get ready when you're in it. A guy can have all the boxes checked. And I feel like I had a lot of these boxes checked, at least from a, you know, provisional and monetary standpoint. I'm like, okay, cool. And then you get into the thing and you're cohabitating with this person and you're learning to actually build a life with this person. You're like, oh yeah, like money is the smallest issue right now. It is a non-issue. It's like, how do I conduct myself as the head of the home? What you feel like a child when you first enter it. You're like, okay, what do I do now? There's no amount of theorizing or, you know, thinking about it or writing your thoughts down or even casting a vision. Although men should have a vision, you could sort of build that out when you're doing it. And Will, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that too.
Yeah, if it's your vocation, then it's the thing that is supposed to help you get to heaven, the thing that's supposed to form you. So the idea that you're going to be formed before you start it is crazy. You get into it, and the pressure it puts on you is going to wear away the weaknesses that otherwise you would never even have known about. Mike saying that he actually had a lot of the boxes ticked in terms of finances, whatever, before he got married. I think that's actually quite unusual. Mike's got a kind of focus and drive to him that most guys don't have. Most guys don't ever lift what Mike can in the gym. Even if they have the genetics, they don't have the mentality to do it. They're not going to spend 15 years trying. I'm sure there's plenty of guys out there who'd get close, but don't. This is why, if you look at the stats on income, for example, and the studies on identical twins show this, guys who are married earn around 15 to 20% more than guys who aren't, right? Even with identical twins. And that's because the guy who's taken the step to get married has put more pressure on himself, which gives him more motivation, more discipline, more focus to get it done because he's got more skin in the game. So I think it's actually a pretty rare guy who can tick off even the financial box before he gets married.
Point and thank you for the kind words, Will. And to the point, to the red pill guys that talk about sex and money. Well, if it's about sex and money, get married, because married couples experience a higher level of sexual satisfaction, and men, even divorced men, have more money than otherwise never married men. And I can tell you, as a guy who was already in a decent financial position when we first got married, I've been married going on 5 years. I now make quadruple the amount that I made when I first met my wife. Every single year has been like this linear progression upward. Glory be to God. Praises be to God. And as I have this perspective of being, you know, a degenerate guy before, and also the perspective of being civilly married and in experiencing the marital act, and then now being convalidated and within the sacrament of matrimony and experiencing intimacy. And there is absolutely no comparison to the union and the act that, you know, man and woman who are, you know, in the good graces of God under the sacrament of matrimony, what they experience as far as sexual satisfaction. So if it's about sex and money, guys, get married. Choosing the right woman is probably the greatest force multiplier in your life. And I'm sure you've already experienced that, you know, despite it just being a short time for you, Jacob.
Yeah, for sure. No, I can't even imagine being outside of it any, like, I mean, just the amount of love and intimacy that you have with your wife is multiplying everything that's going on inside the bedroom as well as outside the bedroom. So it's, yeah, I mean, it's an incredible amount of grace that you feel. Like it's not, I mean, I shouldn't, I maybe I shouldn't say it that way, 'cause it's not like I'm like seeing a light coming down from the rafters or something like that, but it's something where you don't have anything blocking you, right? So there's nothing in your way. You're just, it's just you and your wife, and you're being intimate. So there's nothing in the way, whether that be physical or mental, right? You want everything that she has to give you with all of your heart, right? So you just go for it.
And there's also a profundity in how much it highlights your specific vices as a man. And they could all be different for you guys. But for me, with regards to a fundamental lack of meekness, the inclination to get fiery and angry and impatient, and also greed. Where I was so used to being in selfishness, where I was so used to, hoarding money and being on my own, where now I have to take care of a family. And hey, families are expensive. And so having forced to build the virtue of generosity and the virtue of meekness so I can be gentle and not cold and hard with my wife has been incredibly like hard to deal with, but immensely sanctifying, right? Or the ver developing the virtue of chastity and understanding. Like there's some periods in your married life with, when she's postpartum or what have you, where you actually fundamentally have to practice chastity. And even when you are engaging in the act on a regular basis, it's like, are you preserving all of those sort of sexual resources you have for her? Or are you leeching it out in these different areas, looking at other women, looking at filth on your phone, engaging in self-abuse, et cetera. It is it's an immensely heavy cross, but there it's it provides an immeasurable amount of holiness when you're paying attention and you're putting it into practice.
Yeah,
Yeah, for
what
sure. Being, don't, not being greedy with your time too is something that I've found. Even if you're saying like, oh, I'm reading good books, or I'm going out and I'm in prayer or something like that. It's like when you get married, your time has to shift a lot, right? So I had to kind of slow down a lot, because when I'm living by myself, I'm able to kind of like live this pseudo monk lifestyle, right? But then when you get married, you got to make sure that you're not being greedy with yourself. And then, yeah, you got to make sure that your habits line up with the habits of your wife so that you have as much time as you can just with her.
Yeah, the child analogy imagery that you used, Mike, is I feel like I'm learning to walk again. Like I went through a life and it's vaguely useful, and now I have to figure everything out again. And that's with all of the support of, you and Tim and Will. And all of the literature and the backing of the church, still with all of that, the nuances are things I would have never expected. Greedy with time is a great one. I didn't realize how much of an impatient son of a bitch I am until you have to be patient with somebody, until you have somebody with you every step of the way. I never realized how impatient. How irritable, how particular I am when the only person you have to consult is yourself every given second of the day. It's extraordinary. So, and then Will, what you're saying that, yeah, but if it's to get you to heaven, like, or do you expect to have been a saint prior to the thing that was supposed to make you a saint? Like, well, that's a bit ludicrous as well. So it's nice to know that. That like this isn't data that something's wrong, it's data that it's working.
Right. And the more kids you have, the more difficult it gets, and the more your weaknesses are pinpointed and exposed for you to work on, because the demands on your time go up, the level of stress you have to handle goes up, the number of things you can possibly complain and grumble about goes up. So, as so often in the spiritual life, you think you're making some good progress, and that could be a dangerous thing because you start to feel very proud of yourself and complacent and self-satisfied. So as you see in the lives of the saints, even when they go away to live in the desert in caves, God sends some kind of trial to them to remind them, hey, you're not all that. Like, you need me.
It's progressive overload for the soul.
That's it.
It is, and I have the DOMs, you know. I have a lot of lactic acid buildup right now. I need some foam
But it's funny
rolling.
how you think you know before you get married. You think you know how you're going to act. You think you know, and it's like everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face, and then you're in a place with your wife. You're like, okay, things are good. And then you have a child. There's an elbow to the chin, and then you go from one to two or two to three. It's exactly what Will said, and it's funny just even thinking about myself a year ago to now. You're like, whoa, like I was retarded. And in a lot of ways still retarded and growing out of that retardation, but it's a beautiful thing.
Well, it was, I think, Will, you shared with me, I think it was a Chesterton quote about Peter Pan and Molly, where that the price of love is the cross. The price of the thing that you want is the cross. And you can't stay 12 years old forever. You can't stay 25 years old forever. And in What a Woman Is, Mega makes a really good point that the red pill seems to have this conception of relationships that basically everybody's 25 forever. Like that's where your brain stops and how you should think about things as a single 25-year-old man or woman. And Mike, I'm kind of quoting you back to you, but in your interview you talk about how if you can kind of use blinders. You did this with your hands. If you could sort of use blinders and just focus on your wife, then all of those resources, not just erotic, but also like agape, are directed at this one person. And you love her when she's in shape, when she's postpartum, when she's got, whiskers because she's 85 years old, at all these different stages. Like that's the love story. And there's such an arrested development mindset to that misses that the peak human experience is some 25-year-old endless fever dream.
Yeah, and I will. I think you illustrated that in a way too with the data that we talked about. It was about a month ago, with regards to fertility in women in their 20s versus their 30s, and if they were having regular intimacy, it was like, still in the 80th percentages that they were still getting pregnant. Is that correct? It maybe went from
Yeah,
like 86 to 82 or something like that.
late 30s women having sex twice a week, almost no difference in fertility versus late 20s women.
So take that, red pill bros, bunch of coomer brains. That's the problem. It's a coomer culture. And when you have a coomer culture, of course, like, you look at a woman at 25, past 25, and their minds is when they begin to erode. But the data is right there. And what a grace that is too, right? From God, like a woman being able to conceive still in those, quote unquote, later years. But this is why, lust and pornography and this sort of degenerate promiscuous culture is so damning in so many ways, and not just with regards to how, viewing women and sort of that timeline, but also how it has deconstructed and destroyed and subverted the marital act itself, where it's merely just become a sort of an object of masturbation with another person's body. And nothing more, nothing less than that, and as reduce people down to things. And so when you're really practicing chastity, it really, of course, I'm physically attracted to my wife, and it grows, every day, every week. It doesn't matter how pregnant she is, even now, it's the same, and it grows. But you stop seeing them purely as just like what's physically attractive about them. And it's hard to explain beyond that, but there's something else at play there, which I think can only be described as obviously as grace, right? When you're in the act, you're like, I've never been so attracted to anybody in my entire life. But it's more than something that is merely just can be reduced down to a physical trait, if that makes sense, of course.
Yeah, Jacob, I wanted to ask to expand on what you said about the greedy with time and probe a bit more if there are other things now that you're sort of, you and I both are in close quarters combat with all of our vices. What other things have you found that, shoot, now I gotta, like, I didn't even know I had to work on this, but I gotta work on this now, if you feel so comfortable.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, I feel like pride and particularity would be two things that I'm dealing with. Like, my way is the best way, and you know, there's no other way to do it. And then it's like, oh, there's something, like there's a glass of water on the counter. Like, I don't leave glasses of water on the counter, you know. It's just the small things like that where you have to learn that your way is not always the best way. Right. And it's not that I'm not leading her or something like that with like important things. It's like, you know, take charge, you know, do what you need to do to have your household in order. Right. But when you have small things like a glass of counter on the or a glass of water on the counter, or like one dish is in the sink or something like that, like you have to be able to understand that like your way is not always the best way. So I think that's probably the biggest thing, is that I'm wanting a little bit too much like time to myself, and then I'm wanting to do things like exactly my way, just being a little bit too militant about it.
Yeah, so I definitely have the same thing. And I don't know. I mean, this might be an OCD thing. I'm curious if any of you experience this as well, but I struggle to not make like moral valuations on non-moral things, where like a glass on the counter, to me, I put a should and an ought to that, as opposed to like, it's just, it is what it is. Like, it could also be in the dishwasher right now and it doesn't freaking matter. But I'm like, no, but that's like not okay. Like, the right good, the more good thing is if the world was this way. And so I get like more invested in the particulars than I think is healthy. Do you also experience this, or is that just me?
No, that's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I think that the more fussy rules you have, the gayer you are. Like, God only had 10. God had 10. 10 commandments. If your list goes much over 10, then you're into weird territory.
Yeah, that's it's definitely effeminate behavior, no doubt about it. And so what is so confronting about being a husband too is that cup of water on the counter, or that dirty diaper, that dirty plate. Father Ripperger says this as well. Okay, so it's not just me being a quote unquote normie Catholic. The most trad of trad priests said the same thing. That's your problem. Who is the leader of the house? It's your problem. You're just lucky that God blessed you with a helpmate to take care of most of these things, so you don't have to do all of these things, but that's still your problem. And so there's a humility you have to take to, of course, like, that could run into itself if you're literally cooking all the time and cleaning and changing diapers and your wife is not doing anything. Of course, I'm not proposing that to be a good idea whatsoever, but that's still your problem. It's you could take care of it, and if it becomes a problem, you have to address it. But either way, it's your problem, whether it means having a conversation of, you know, the order of the home, or just simply taking care of it for your wife. So it's been very confronting for me.
If you did do it all, Mike, the real problem with that is that you would then not have enough time to do all the other stuff that you can perform better, right? You could do it all, and I'm sure you'd do a great job of it. Like, you'd be really good at picking up loads of glasses. But the fact that you spend your time on that would take away from generating income or from helping guys non-financially. There are things you can do that you're better suited to. So it's all about the division of roles.
Yeah. That's exactly right. Go ahead, Nick.
Mike, you just offered me one hell of a frame shift here, which is that there's this perspective of deserving. I deserve a wife, and then now that I have one, I deserve her to behave as perfectly as a woman and a helpmeet can behave. But it's, she's a helpmeet, right? She's there to assist. And as you just said, like, it's not expected or a guarantee. It's like a blessing. So the appropriate response is actually to have sort of a baseline, no expectations or like low expectations, and then gratitude for all of the assistance that's being provided, as opposed to I actually expect the bar up here, and everything that you don't meet is you're just such a failure.
She's not a dude, right? So like you kind of expect you're like, this is what we do. Like we go out and we do things, like we have, I just think guys have a lot of energy, like we're built to do like a lot of things and at the end of the day, like hit the pillow, like and go to sleep and wake up and do the same thing. No. And I just think you have to set that expectation where your wife's not gonna like work like a dude. Like yeah, she's not gonna do everything like a dude, right? So you have to treat your wife like a woman, right?
So there's a really interesting bit in Aquinas's commentary on Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics. If Tim was here, he'd give a better explanation of it. But they're looking at the differences between men and women, and Aquinas makes the point that because women are weaker in rationality and willpower and more incontinent and less courageous, all the rest of it, he says, therefore, they should not be corrected as harshly, right? When they fall short of what the proper virtuous action might have been. So, this frame shift you're talking about, Nick, is basically going easier on your wife, not getting so frustrated when things might not go perfectly.
Yeah, but it is like homosexual in some way to not see that, to see a woman as a man. Well, I guess maybe it's better to say gender dysphoric than homosexual. It's gender dysphoric to see like the anger response or the frustration or the confusion. Why aren't you doing this the way that I would do this? Why aren't you behaving the way that other men have behaved in my life betrays a lot of underlying gender dysphoria of like, well, because she's a woman, bro. Like, why don't you see it that way?
Yeah, because you're so feminist, you don't even know it because you're the
Yeah.
fish that can't see the water it's been swimming in for the entirety of the time you've been alive because it's everywhere. The other insight here is on an even deeper Christian level, don't even get too surprised if men let you down, right? Because that's about the weakness of human nature as well. They might not even have thought it through and wanted to, they're just thoughtless.
It's definitely easy too to get to a place where you're so comfortable with your wife, she's your, best friend, that you start to, and this is my problem. I don't know if you guys can relate to this, but I'm a playful guy. I like to riz a lot. I like to poke a lot. But I'm like, I can't. I've done that to my wife to such a degree where like sometimes she says, I'm not a guy. She says, I know you're joking, but like, I don't like joke like this all the time. And sometimes like it gets to my head, and I can't compute that in my brain because if I were to say something to you, like men communicate by insulting each other and not meaning it, obviously, right? That's how we get along. But to do that with your wife, like I've done that to such a frequency where like I need to audit myself because it's like a second language for me. So I don't know if you guys can relate to that, but I certainly it's been a problem.
Yeah, like sarcasm, right? Like not women aren't gonna get sarcasm the same way men get sarcasm. Like luckily my wife, she gets it and it's not like that, but yeah, tone it down a little bit, I mean some women don't get sarcasm at all and they just like look at you stone faced and get pissed and stuff,
Yeah, like don't be a retarded pickup artist. You don't have to neg your wife. She's your wife.
Might be
You're
okay.
treating her like a man.
Yeah,
You're
yeah,
treating
yeah.
her like a man in those moments. And you're like
Yeah.
making fun of her and these things that you know, it's endearing to you, but to her, it could be, she could be having a particularly bad day and she takes it to heart, right?
Right. Yeah. And I'm sure that you stack those things up over time and it's just going to erode her feeling sexy, her feeling feminine. She's gonna feel like you think she's just another bro.
Yeah, you're just
And
treating her like a dude. Like, don't be gay, dude.
moral of the story.
Yeah.
Jacob, you and I are sort of in a unique position of starting families in what feels like the fall of Rome. You know, the world in every way is crumbling around us. How much of a pariah, how much of a schizophrenic in the woods do you feel like being a salmon swimming upstream with what you're about to undertake? Like, do you feel like an outcast?
Yeah, I mean, internally, I certainly do, you know, and I think it's probably something that down the road people are gonna find out more and more, like that, you know, like you guys were saying, you know, a while back, you're gonna have to cut some people off. Like, I've already had to kind of pretty much cut people off. Like, you know, it's gonna have to happen. And then yeah, you go like spending the holidays and stuff like that, and half the time you're just like frustrated. You're like, oh man, like what are you talking about right now? And like you try to have conversations, and you just, yeah, you hit like a brick wall a lot of times, you know. So definitely, I mean, you definitely get that even amongst your own family, right? So yeah, it's gonna, I think it's just gonna intensify really, because I mean things are gonna keep going one way, and then, you know, I'm just gonna stay the line, right? So it's gonna be, yeah, it's gonna be interesting going through, especially I feel like probably when you have kids, you know, because then your parents want to get involved and everyone wants to get involved, right? And then you got to be like, this is not how we run things, you know. And so yeah, there, I think
But
there's
you
gonna
know,
be.
in those moments though, you have an opportunity to exercise these boundaries. And as you have more children, they end up messing with you less. You know, with our first daughter, we knew we were not going to vaccinate her, and there was some pushback. Weathered the storm. Second daughter, same thing. Nobody said a damn thing. Wife
Right.
doing a home birth. People are saying some things, but then as you keep flexing that muscle, people eventually just back off because they're like, oh, these people have boundaries. I love them. I respect them. Because if you allow them to trample all over you, that's your fault. But
Right.
you do
Yeah.
develop sort of a thick skin over time, especially if you're living a little bit more traditionally. Your wife is at home. What do you mean? Like, she's not working? Like, what about? And you have to have that conversation. You know, you're not, you know, jabbing your kids up, or you know, you're doing a home birth, or what have you. Whatever it is, you're going to get pushback from all angles. But you know, it's first of all, it creates more closeness with you and your family because you guys are all on the same page. You know, really constructing that marital island, and those people over time screw with you less. I don't know if you guys have experienced that at the same time. And I love my wife's family. I love my own family to absolute death. But there's just now, they don't really have a say anymore because they know what we're going to do anyways.
And the
So.
ones who don't really believe in what you're doing just get scared anyway. Like when you have seven, eight, nine kids, it's just too much for people to handle. Even writing out the Christmas cards or something, or the presents, it's easier for them if they're not really passionate about your vision just to step away. And it can be really sad when that happens. So I don't recommend bringing the wall down. I think it's better if someone else does, right? You just stand firm, stay open to them, and you'll find it will come down on their side. And if so, fine. They've removed themselves from your life and they're a spiritual danger to you anyway. And on the other side, if you really truly believe in what you're doing, then people will just know not to question it. They'll just see it's futile. Like I had three kids under three by the time I was age 23. And people were like, how are you going to afford it? And that's my problem. That's not yours. Don't you worry about that. Right? One way was not having a pension, or what you guys call a 401k, like zero payments into that. I'm just starting now, middle age, nothing, because I prioritize paying for my family instead. So most people don't want to make that sacrifice. But the reason personal finance is personal is because it's me, not you, right? I've got more kids. I started younger because I made those choices. And I'm also happy to deal with the consequences of having made those choices later in life. And that's me. That's my trade-off, right? So that's how it's going to be. And when people see you're clear about that, then you can take the anxiety off them. Like, don't worry about me.
Yeah, but Will, what, how are you going to afford your cruise in the Cameroon Islands?
Well, this came up again when I was having child seven. People were like, well, how can you afford this? Same way I always do. It'll be fine. And if I never get to retire, then I won't ever retire. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, you're gonna have 85 great grandchildren, and that's more wealth than owning stock in the S&P 500 that's earning 3 to 5% annually. Like, who gives a shit?
You don't realize how fundamentally, and this is to no one's, own fault that aren't aware, how anti-family most people are, right?
But pro advice about
Yeah,
family.
pro advice, but anti-family, right? Like, even just, which is crazy because, like, three kids is not a lot, but, God willing, we're gonna have our third child in June, in July. I've already heard, like, are you gonna stop? Like, that's a lot. You're like, dude, this is three. Like, are you kidding me? I'll have 15 if God gives me 15. Like, and they can't compute it. You're like, yeah, because we live in such a contraceptive culture. Just like Will said, it was so beautifully said. The fish that doesn't understand the water that it's swimming in right now. It's like the culture is so anti-family, but you don't realize how anti-family it is until you start your own family and you look around. You're like, everybody's got two kids. You're like, oh yeah, her tubes are tied. He's snipped. They're using condoms. You're like, wow, this is incredibly gay.
Or they're all on the pill. It's funny you said, like, are you guys going to stop, as if it's your, like, roller coaster ride that you're allowed to, like, turn on and turn off whenever you want, which I remember, like, talking to some friends who it took them 3 months to get pregnant. And I was thinking to myself, I was like, 3 months sounds nice. This is before we knew. It's like, 3 months sounds really nice. You know what? I'd like 3 months. I'd like 3 months to just kind of settle in, watch movies at night, get, extend this honeymoon vibe. And then that test turned positive. And the next, like, 6 hours of my day, what I felt like was I had built a house of cards my whole life. And somebody just started putting, like, a heavy weight on it. And I just started auditing, like, is this thing gonna hold? Is everything I've ever done, am I ready for, like, any weight to be placed on me at all? And the fiat just blitzed through my head. And I had, like, an appreciation for what Mary said more than I ever have before. Like, okay, be it done unto me according to thy word. And we're not bearing the Son of God. So, I think it was Saint Therese who described herself as Christ's plaything. Have you guys heard that phrase? I've been thinking about that a lot more lately. It's sort of an odd phrase. It doesn't fit quite well to my ears, but there's a lot of resonance that I have with it, that, like, we should just be glad to have anything happen to us according to the pleasure and the will of God, basically.
Yeah, and what do you need to spend 6, 7, 8, 9 months after you get married, like, having fun and traveling? Like,
There's
it's
so
so
much
dumb.
of the Great British Baking Show left to watch, Mike.
Yeah, I was at my I was at Brian Holdsworth's house, my friend Brian Holdsworth, a couple weeks ago. There's like 15 children between just two of him and his friend Chris. And I'm there with my, little babies, whatever. And I'm like, this is the fruits of not waiting, doing it early, and just getting on with the show and getting on with the story. And here you have this beautiful, well-ordered family where like they become this own, this, even just the children are this, like this well-functioning little society. And that's what happens when you have a lot of kids. Will can attest this more than I ever could, having seven children himself. So it's like, you know, you're going to waste even just a month or two or three of fertility. Why would you? Why would you? What's the point of you getting married? So you can travel and like sip margaritas while you're in Turks and Caicos. Like what are we doing? Get on with the show.
Well, do you guys have any other questions for Jacob? Jacob, do you have any other thoughts or questions?
No, not really. I would just say, yeah, like if I could sum it up, it's always that finding that golden mean, right? So whenever we're talking about these things, I always appreciate how it feels like that's the framework of like, there's these two things, you know, you can go too much this way, you can go too much that way. And so it's always about trying to find that and going through that. But I always appreciate hearing you guys' perspectives and everything like that. So I appreciate you guys having me on.
Good to talk to you. Hey, Jacob, what would you say to a guy in his early, mid, maybe late 20s who's thinking that it's just too risky to get married today? He'll never find a good woman.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's out there. It's out there no matter what. A lot of times the good women are, you know, the ones that aren't putting themselves forward and trying to, you know, they're not going to put their foot forward because good women aren't the ones initiating contact, right? So you just got to be the one to initiate contact. And because you don't want a woman who's going to, you know, initiate contact with you anyways, right? So go out there and, you know, they're everywhere. I mean, you don't need to like find the girl at the TLM who's like, you know, doing all the pious stuff and things like that, but you need to find a good woman and, you know, just search. I mean, I live in a town of 400 people and I don't even live in town. So,
So I hope everyone heard that. Jacob said that these women are everywhere. You just need to actually look. You need to be proactive. You need to be bold as a man and take action on it, same as he did.
That's right.
You can't just sit in a corner and cry.
Yeah. Yeah. In March, once I'm done with the documentary, we'll be opening the doors again for more guys into the matchmaking program. That's what worked with Jacob. That's what worked with a friend, Christian, and his wife Kara, and five other people who are now engaged. So it's all we're doing is making it so that people like Jacob, who live outside of a town of 400 people, have access to the sorts of good quality women that can end up being your helpmeet. So yeah. You guys can check the link in the bio for that. Follow Will on Twitter at Be Here Leader. Follow Mike on Twitter at Mike Pantile, right? That's just your name?
My name on everything. Yeah, it's just Mike, my name. Pantile.
Don't follow me on Twitter. I tweet about organic carrots. And follow Tim on Twitter at Timotheology. So subscribe also. I'm the only person who will ever say this. Subscribe.
Yeah, we need to do the CTAs. We got to be way better about the CTAs. We never do it. It's like, comment, subscribe, share, the most base Catholic podcast on the internet.
Or we'll just stop doing it. Like, if you don't all like, comment, share, and subscribe, we're going to quit.
Yeah.
That's it.
All right, boys.
All will be lost. God bless you guys.
God bless you.
Catch you next week.
Take care. God bless. Bye.